Today's episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, the first of our, let's say, what if week series. It's going to be like a 2-week series, but first one up is going to be a draft centric one with our good friend Trevor Magnotti. That's coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Come on!
All right, we're here on Locked On Cavs. My co-host, Evan Damrell, is with me. Evan, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, not a whole lot. Dave is ending. Westworld's ending tonight. We're recording this on a Sunday. But I don't know. There's this show that's coming back, so hear me out. It's about a guy named Rick, and he's a scientist that turns himself into a pickle. It's the funniest shit I've ever seen. Have you ever heard of it? It's called Rick and Morty.
It's very good. Kudos to you for sticking with Westworld.
The bit?
That's great.
Oh, that too.
Yeah, I don't know why you're doing that to yourself, but we have a very fun episode today. As I mentioned on the top, we're going to do a draft-centric What If Week, and joining us, couldn't think of anyone better to do this with us. It's the one, the only, Trevor Magnotti. Trevor, what's going on, buddy? Are you ready to dive into some stuff? Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready to try to win the Cavs the 07, 09, or 2010 titles. I think we can get at least one of these if we make some good decisions here today.
Yeah, there's some very interesting things if we go back and really look at this and look at some of this, the way that this kind of played out. We're going to start, though, with the... the 2000, I believe it's the 2013 NBA draft. This is the Anthony Bennett draft. This is obviously a very precarious lottery when we go back and look at it all time. Now, there's obviously some names you could certainly reach for and be like, that guy was the best player on this draft or second best player on this draft, and you can say that now. Trevor always been like, we have to take in how we thought of these guys at the time when we're scouting these things out. So when we look at this, when I'm looking at this, when we're thinking through this, I think we have to kind of remember that some of these guys are not going to be thrown in. But I think when you look back at the time, Anthony Bennett was not the guy. It was really supposed to be Nerlens Noel. If you look at when we were back at Right Down Euclid at the time, Trevor, you and I think were in the homies at Pulsar had Nerlens in the RDE mock. I think when we know now, if I was going to make this pick and sort of pick among the guys that we thought were in consideration for that pick, I think the pick is actually supposed to be Oladipo. I think that because, number one, obviously he doesn't blossom until much later. There's a lot of stuff with him where he takes him a while to really become the Depot we knew pre that quadricep injury. But this is a guy that had a skill set that would have fit, that has fit very well in the modern NBA, was a very good defender. You know, I know there's I think at the time I was like, there's positional overlap, give me the rim protecting center behind Kyrie and Deion. But I think when you look back at this, I really do just think Depot should have probably been number one. And I don't even remember how deeply discussed that really was in terms of him being an option there, but obviously the Cavs picked the worst thing possible. And I think when you just look at the history of the team and you look at them building now and everything like that, I think there's just a lot there that I wonder how much of it was avoidable if you just don't botch it, or at least if it's a little better, more sustainable if you don't botch this draft.
Yeah, I think we start off with a good example and something we've talked about here before, which is when David Gilbert gets involved and tries to outsmart people, things go poorly. which I think is going to be a common theme with a lot of the things that we're going to talk about here today. Looking back in that draft, there were probably, I think, eight guys who I think the Cavs could have realistically considered, like you said, wide open top of the draft. I think it would any of Bennett, Victor Oladipo, Otto Porter, Cody Zeller, Alex Len, Nerlens Noel, Ben Lacklemore, and Trey Burke were like realistically on the board. That's eight of the top nine picks. And I think the Cavs could have really gone with any of them and not gotten killed just kind of based on how that draft was set up. I think that Oladipo is also the pick. I think that there is some reason for skepticism with how well he would have worked out in Cleveland, just when you consider two things. One, Deion was already clashing with Kyrie, and kind of the fit there wasn't perfect. And when you inject another guard into that group that the team was supposed to be building around, that's a little tough to be able to manage, especially for a competent team, much less the Cavs at that point in time. And the other issue that I have is that, like, Oladipo would not have become the player that he is in Indiana in Cleveland.
Oh, there's no way.
It would have been a similar situation to Orlando, because you have to remember how raw Oladipo was. He could not dribble coming out of college, and there was very little faith that he was going to become like a reliable pull-up shooter in the way that he has in the NBA, because he had a really hard time getting into the paint off the dribble in the pick and roll. And I think that he really would have struggled, I think, early on, and we would have had kind of a similar situation as Anthony Bennett had, where, you know, we would have gotten probably 20 games into that season, then, God, this guy's not playable. And that was kind of the case in Orlando, too. He put up good numbers because that team was terrible, but I definitely think that while he probably could have ended up being a pretty valuable player for this team, I think that he probably would have struggled a little bit more than we like to admit, going back and kind of looking at the situation that he would have gone into.
I think that's right. Evan, is Depo your pick in this? If you're redrafting this, you go back and do this, you agree with Trevor?
Yeah. If I'm just looking at this in a 2013 lens and heading into this draft, I was pretty firmly either Team Nerlens or Team Victor going into this situation. And but like, I guess just my question for the chat now is, like, yeah, no, I agree with you guys. I think Oladipo is the option, but with the power of hindsight, do you think the Cavs should have taken Giannis, and do you think Giannis would have blossomed into the player he is now if he ended up in Cleveland instead of Milwaukee at 15 overall?
No, I don't. He's allowed to slow build a little bit up in Milwaukee. There's something very different about being a really interesting prospect that goes 15th versus going number one overall. Like, if he's this guy that you can only find, like, really grainy video clips of, and he goes number one, that's, like, some... That's just, I think, a whole other thing. And I'm not going to say he would have been bad. I think even when before he was the Giannis monster we know now, I think this was a guy that was doing really interesting stuff on defense, all this stuff. But I think hindsight... I don't think if we're being kind of pragmatic about this and kind of trying to do this sort of as cleanly as possible, I do not think that saying Giannis should have gone number one is really a realistic thing to say. I think when I think about the impact of this draft and taking Bennett, I think the real problem and the thing the Cavs miss out on more than Giannis, more than McCollum or Steven Adams or whatever, like, competent NBA player you say they could have gotten. If it's Oladipo, so be it. But when I look at this, you look at this draft, and we're going to mirror this when we talk about Luke Jackson later in the show, you're looking at an era where the Cavs were able to have one really, really good draft and then botched every pick that comes after that. And if you can just get one guy here that can help you and maybe blossoms, maybe just becomes a really good running mate for Kyrie or LeBron becomes like, or whatever, like, I think if you just get like an actual other good piece here, it just matters so much more than, I think, swinging for the home run. I just don't know how realistic it is to talk about Giannis being number one when he was, like, the unknown of unknowns at this time and was just, like, an anomaly who we didn't know what he was going to be at. And he goes at 15, but no one really knows what he could have been.
Yeah, and I really think there's something to – the unique situation that Milwaukee put Giannis in. I mean, people forget with his evolution of things, part of the reason he became so successful as a driver and as a ball handler was after his rookie year, they have Brandon Jennings and a sign and trade. Monta Ellis is dealt away. And suddenly they're looking at a roster where they're like, shit, outside of Brandon Knight, we need someone to just handle the ball. And like, the Cavs never would have put him in that situation, even beyond like thinking if they actually take him number one, they never would have given him like the on-ball opportunities that he would have needed to be able to blossom just with the way that the roster was constructed. And I think that kind of limits what he's able to become in his, you know, third, four seasons if you're still working in a frame of, okay, this is still Kyrie's team. And, you know,
Kyrie and DeAndre are not giving up touches. Let's just be frank. Like, that, there's no way that is happening. And there's not like, it's not like there was an, Evan, you know, there's no way the Cavs have an organizational structure to be like, let's let Giannis do stuff. Like, that is just not the kind of this is not the organization that can decide that and try to do it. This has never been an organization that can do that.
Yeah.
No, not at all. They are still learning from those same exact mistakes right now. So
let Andre Drummond shoot.
Yeah, I don't know. Could be worse.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, so Trevor, as we wrap up this Bennett segment, what was he at the time? We obviously know what he is now. We obviously know that he is, you know, if not the worst number one pick of all time, one of the absolute worst picks, number one picks of all time. He obviously, though, as you said, was a guy that was in, you know, a reasonable outcome for someone to take very high in this draft. What actually was he as a prospect when we're coming into this draft, when the Cavs pick him at number one?
Yeah, I think that the thing with Bennett was that he was, the fact that he couldn't shoot was kind of the big deal breaker, because like the idea behind him was he was a decent shooter at UNLV and also was like this really strong kind of energy pick and roll finisher, kind of a throwback player, kind of like a Zach Randolph, or you know, he got comped to Charles Barkley foolishly a couple times, but like it was that kind of mold of player where like you're going to use him in transition, you're going to have him beat guys down low, and you're going to kind of work in post ups and pick and rolls, and also he's got this potential that he's going to develop into this pretty good shooter that you can run pick and pops for and things like that. The fact that he came in and he just had zero capability to be able to shoot the ball, and the shoulder injury probably is the big reason for that. He never got off on the right foot in terms of building his shot from where he was in college. I think that is the big thing that limited him, because if he was actually able to shoot, I think you can forgive a lot of the defensive issues and you can forgive a lot of the effort issues, because like he still would have been able to be useful, I think, on offense. And you would have in particular been able to make something of like him and Tristan Thompson playing together in a way that just was not capable without him having that functionality. So I think that was kind of the big skill outside of like the off-court problems with him. That was the big skill that never came along, that he was just never able to develop in a meaningful way.
Yeah, Trevor, you know this, and I think Evan knows this. I'm not like a big college basketball guy, but I can say I'd watch some Otto Porter, I'd watch some Depot, I'd watch some Nerlens. There's some very, very encouraging Nerlens games before he has that ACL injury. I definitely at least watch a couple of Ben McLemore games. This could have just been like I never tracked it down or whatever. I don't think I ever have watch until like I started watching tape of him before his first season. I don't think I'd ever watched like UNLV Anthony Bennett tape.
Oh, I sure didn't.
And I don't know if there's like a ton out there that's like this guy like really popped, or if it's anything where it's like this is a guy that really did pop in college.
Yeah, I mean he definitely looked a lot more functional as an athlete at the college level. I mean his thing was that like at baseline he's supposed to be like an energy thing off the bench, and like It was just the weight issues and the shoulder injury.
He was just a big off the bench.
Got rid of that. If you watch his, I remember vividly watching his first round loss to Cal in the NCAA tournament, and he looked like the best athlete on the floor without question. That was kind of the thing that, you know, sold me in like, okay, this is a guy you can take like top 10. Is like he has like this foundation of skills you can maybe build on, and also he looks like at least above average NBA athlete. And then just that never materialized.
Yeah. Evan, do you agree on my sentiment about the real about the impact of the draft then, and just not getting someone useful does ultimately matter in some way, even though obviously they win a title, everything like that?
Yes and no. I think Cleveland's circumstances are just a little bit different. You get LeBron, who's arguably the greatest player of all time, and we'll touch on Luke Jackson in a bit and how he was a huge miss in 2004. And then you fast forward to 2011, you get Kyrie and Tristan, who are both hits. And then after that, you get Deion, who's a miss. You get Bennett, who's a miss. You get Wiggins, who you never really get to look at, but now that we know with Minnesota, is a miss. But at the same time, that Kyrie era team also had the luxury of LeBron coming back, and I don't know if, like, in any other team's circumstances, I don't think you can get this easy of a pass just because you have a transcendental player that so happens to have grown up in your franchise's location. So that definitely makes a difference, and maybe the Cavs get a little bit more leniency because of that. But, yeah, yes and no, I do agree with it. In Cleveland, yeah, I agree with it, but if, like, you gave me a team like Milwaukee, just because we were talking about that before, like, Giannis is a transcendental player, but if he leaves and the Bucks whiff a few times on the draft, like, they could be set back for a long, long time. And I don't know. That's just kind of where I'm at. I feel like Cleveland can get a pass in this scenario, but, like, the 29 other teams, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that they get a pass on whiffing so much in the draft.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk about another draft mistake. That is the Luke Jackson pick from 2004, aka the year after LeBron. That's coming up next. Break your unlock podcast. Built bars are tasty. This is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They have 8 amazing flavors like mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, and a whole bunch of other ones like toffee almond. I love Built Bar. These are bars that are covered 100% in chocolate. They are safe, soft and easy to chew, and they're really great if you need a high protein snack on the go. For example, the peanut butter brownie one, which is my favorite flavor, has 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, only 3 grams of sugar, and only 3 grams of carbohydrates. If you're like me, then when you've been working out or when you're playing sports, you try all these other bad protein bars and they're really uncomfortable to eat, but you down them. That's not the case here with Built Bar. Built Bar is the literally best tasting protein bar you've ever had. They've, again, 8 great chocolate nut flavors, 8 chocolate / nut free flavors. They're amazing. They taste like a candy bar. I love them. They're now part of my daily eating routine, and something where I can get a ton of protein quickly and efficiently and deliciously is really, really important. If you want to try Built Bar, you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you're going to get $10 off your first order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order at builtbar.com. All right, we're back here on the Locked On Cavs podcast. Evan and I are with Trevor Magnotti, one of the very best draft writers you can find online. He's on Twitter at Illegal Screens, writes to places like FanSided and FearlessWriter.com. Evan, why don't you start off with this? what do you remember about Luke Jackson?
He was often hurt, and I now have the fear in the back of my mind that Dylan Windler is going to end up like Luke Jackson ever since Justin Rowan put that seed in my head. And granted, there was a lot of good players that went before Luke in the 2004 draft, just obviously Dwight Howard at 1, and then you have Emeka Okafor, who is solid, and then like players like Devin Harris, Luol Deng, and Andre Iguodala, and even Sean Livingston as well. And after that, it's just kind of, you have like J.R. Smith, Josh Smith, and Demir Nelson, so there's a lot of players you could pull as an example, but what I remember most from Luke Jackson is he hardly played because he was always hurt, and now I'm looking at it now, he's played 46 games total in his 2 years with the Cavaliers. That's what I remember from Luke Jackson.
Trevor, what about you?
Yeah, he was tough just because, like, he was never on the floor, he was never healthy. I obviously don't remember much of his tenure because, like, I wasn't totally, like, paying a ton of attention to the Cavs at this point, much less like paying attention to their guy who played 73 career NBA games. But I remember him coming out, and I remember him being a pretty good athlete. I remember not much else being kind of like a positive for him. And then he was just gone as soon as he entered the draft. just because he, you know, he was hurt all the time and was really ineffective when he was on the floor. So he's kind of a tough guy to be like, oh, like, you know, it's hard to say like, oh, he's like a definite like bad pick when you factor in like kind of the guys who immediately go after him, and then also like he just couldn't get on the floor. So like, it really is kind of like a wash. It's just a forgotten pick in this draft, I think
when I look back at this, this is somewhat similar to around Kyrie, although it's a little bit different. But here's just the three picks outside of the 03 draft. So it starts off with DeJuan Wagner, then it's DeSean Ajop, then it's LeBron, and then it's Luke Jackson. And then from there, the Cavs like basically don't have first round picks for a long time. They don't have a high first round pick for like 8 years because LeBron just, once you get LeBron and he takes off, you're basically removed from having high draft picks. That's how that works. They get, the highest pick they have is JJ Hickson, who's like 18 or 19 off the top of my head. It is an amazing fuck up to go Wagner, Jop, LeBron, Jackson, and none of the guys you draft around LeBron work out. That is unbelievable. And I think, you know, Evan and I have talked about this before. I think it's very much at the root of the issue you have with the first era Cavs, where they're always just trying to find solutions to support LeBron the best way they can. And obviously, drafting can be very hard. Not every team can be like the Pelicans and sort of like very much fall into like a really good situation for a guy like Zion, or like the Grizzlies have a really good situation with Ja, etc. But the Cavs like didn't even get guys that were like league average. They got guys that just like weren't going to matter after this. And that's incredible when you think about it. And even at 10, it's like I went back and tried to read stuff about the draft. Luke Jackson was the guy that most people were like, yeah, this is a good pick for the Cavs at 10. Especially with like Iguodala off the board and Luol Deng off the board, it's like, okay, get the guy who can shoot, play next to LeBron. That makes sense. And it just didn't work in that, but it's just an incredible mess up on that part.
For what it's...
Yeah, it's a hard draft to really like be... It's a hard draft to really be like, okay, well, this is what you should have done instead. Because, you know, you've got the two high school guys, or the three high school guys, I think, later in the draft, Josh Smith, Jarrett Smith, and Darrell Wright, who would be like the three that I'd point to. Based on the roster and how that looked at the time, you know, you've got your big set because you've got Z, you've got Drew Gooden coming in, you've got Jacques. So your bigs are kind of good. You also have like this fair amount of like decent guards because you've got Eric Snow. You've got Sasha, you've got Lucius Harris, you've got guys who can handle the ball, and you've got guys to support around LeBron. What you're really missing is like that backup three that can kind of play the minutes where like LeBron's taking your primary point guard minutes, who can be able to defend like the top guy and can provide at least another athlete or be another shooter. And like around that, I mean, they're like, I kind of shy away from the high school guys because like the development timeline was just not the same for those guys. Like they all took like a year or two to get going. And I think that kind of, you know, could have been a limiting factor too. And that's why they went so much later. So like, it's hard to say like, yeah, like there's another guy here that you could conceive really be like bank on. Okay. Yeah. This is a great fit next to LeBron for this era because like what they needed was a guy like Luke Jackson. It just didn't work.
Evan, where are you at on this? What do you think of, again, me just being like the Cavs really just mess things up and it's really bad?
I don't really, like Trevor kind of touched on, we're all really young when the Cavs drafted Luke Jackson, so I don't really have the power of hindsight to say I told you so. But like you said, I did a little research on this too, and yeah, no, Luke Jackson seemed like the presumptive pick for the Cavs at 10, especially like you said, with Iguodala, Deng, and even like Devin Harris off the board as well. You just get a shooter and hope it works with LeBron. And it just didn't because injuries just held him back for the most part. And like Trevor touched on, like, yeah, I think at the time, besides LeBron and maybe Kevin Garnett, there was a stigma that came with high school players at least. And then it became a lot more conventional with time as well. But there's a bit of a silver lining in 04 is the Cavs got Anderson Varejao with the 30th overall pick in the second round. So there's a little bit of good that came from this draft. Chris, you and I both are big Varejao stands, so this is definitely just a feather in our cap of the moment, one of the best moments in franchise history. But yeah, no, that Luke Jackson pick was a huge miss, and I wonder, maybe we wouldn't poo-poo it so hard if he just didn't have, wasn't ravaged by injuries through his career, but just kind of an unfortunate thing. And I think, yeah, no, I mean, it's just maybe a little bit of bad drafting on the Cavs part and just a little bit of just an unfortunate reality where he couldn't stay healthy or keep it out there on the floor for himself.
Picking at number 10 is hard. I think that's like one of the other morals of the story. Like, picking late in the lottery can be like a very difficult spot to be. Trevor's the draft expert among us. Is that like a fair assessment of number 10, of picking like late in the lottery as opposed to like 4, 5, 6?
Yeah, it's always the range where I'm like, I don't know what to do necessarily, because like these are teams that are bad enough to like really need like some good talent, but also like the guys that you're picking from is, it's routinely like the guys who have like high upside but are, have some impediments to get there, like a Colin Sexton, or the guys who have like no upside but like are pretty like good bets to be like functional rotation players, so like Paul Bridges. You're getting kind of like those two guys are like perfect, like the types of players that you're getting like that at that point in the draft. And I mean, you look at how things work out in kind of like the 8 to 14 range, and it's like Rafael Araujo. So the Cavs weren't the only ones who screwed up in this draft. He goes 8. Andre Iguodala 9th, great player, all star level talent. Who the Sixers are able to get him passing in a way that Arizona never was able to show. Andres Biedrins, who sucked, but was able to stick around. Robert Swift, who really sucked and also had
a lot of great reading about Robert issues. Swift, if you want to go down Sebastian, that rabbit hole.
Yeah, Sebastian Telfair, who was fine, but also like took off the floor as much of the stuff as he gave. And then Chris Humphreys, who was dependable, but like definitely not somebody who like moves the needle, as evidenced by the fact that he played for a lot of bad teams throughout his career. So like, and then you're getting into kind of like, it's funny because all the guys who hit in this draft later on are guys who like had a lot of questions. The high school guys, Jefferson, the Smiths, and then you get like kind of these like try hard guys who are like college veterans and didn't have like high upside. Jameer Nelson, Devontae West goes in this draft. Tony Allen goes in this draft. Kevin Martin comes out of nowhere, to be the 26th pick and be like the third best pick of the late first round. So like it's just really kind of like slim pickings to be like, yeah, like this is definitely the guy that they should have taken at the time.
Yeah, I think that's right. Evan, any guy you would be like, would you have rather had any other guy that's kind of in that range? I think like taking JR at 10 like doesn't work out the way you would want it to. But is the
JR and LeBron at age 23 is not great.
Larry Flint's Hustler Club in the Flats would have made so much money during this time.
No, that would have been a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Honestly, like really unfortunate.
To answer your question, I don't really think there are any players.
It's really unfortunate for all of us, though, that JR didn't go to Atlanta like right away. Could have gone at 17.
Yeah.
Really missed out on that one. All right, we're gonna take one more break. Come back and talk about, I think, perhaps the juiciest what if among these three. That's the 2014 draft, and something that I had forgotten about, that the Cavs wanted to trade up to number 2 from number 4 in that draft. We'll talk about that coming up next on Locked On. All right, we're back here on Lockdown Cavs. I meant the 2012 draft, by the way, not 2014. That is something different. But the 2014 draft is – the 2012 draft, excuse me, is the Dion Waiters draft. Now, the Cavs pick at number 4 in this draft. The top of this draft is an interesting draft. It's a year after Kyrie. It's a year after Tristan. So the Cavs have gotten two guys that would ultimately become very dependable players for the franchise. That's – maybe not as much with known as the Tristan time, but Kyrie is the runaway rookie of the year, all that stuff. We know that the Cavs wanted to trade up to 1 and get Anthony Davis. That was like their white whale of sorts. That's their Moby. That's their, if that's their Captain Ahab, Anthony Davis is their white whale.
Could you imagine?
The other what if here is they want to get up to number 2 with the Charlotte Hornets. And I found an old blog post by a friend of the program, Conrad Kaczmarek, over at Fear the Sword from this, about how Chad Ford had reported that they wanted to get up to number 2, were willing to trade their other first-round pick, which was number 24, to get up to there. And they obviously don't do it, but they were rumored to be interested in Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Thomas Robinson. The other player who was picked of this draft goes Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and Bradley Beal goes number 3. And Thomas Robinson goes 5. Thomas Robinson would have been a disastrous pick to trade up for. Evan, but when I tell you, theoretically, the Cavs could have traded up to 2 and gotten Bradley Beal. And obviously, we don't know if Beal becomes the exact same guy in Cleveland with Kyrie as opposed to John Wall. There's a lot of questions, yada, yada. But if I could tell you they draft Bradley Beal instead of Deion Waiters, what is your reaction if this could have theoretically happened and they could have gotten up and gotten Beal? Because this is a rabbit hole that I certainly went down.
If they traded up to 2 and they took Beal, heading into the draft, by the way, I was an MKG guy. Like, I was secretly hoping deep down that he would fall to 4 to
Me
Cleveland.
Too. And a friend of Kyrie's. That's him and Kyrie had played together in high school. Like, mm-hmm. there's a connection there, and I wonder. And that spot on the floor was a big need for the team.
Yeah, and I thought, like, oh, he plays defense. He can mask some of Kyrie's weaknesses. Like, the Cavs can make, like, a gritty defensive team and have Kyrie be the thing. Like, I was also a filthy casual. I have a story about this draft I can share later after the Cavs selected Beal, but or not Beal, Waiters. But if the Cavs traded up to 2 and selected Beal, I don't think the Cavs would end up trading for Shumpert or JR in this scenario, because you wouldn't be. I don't think he'd be a problem child like Deion, because Bradley Beal, other than Anthony, is the second best player in this draft class, you could argue. And I think you have a big three of Kyrie, Beal, LeBron, and hell, even Kevin Love. You can trade Bennett and Wiggins for that. That's a amazing team, and just the shooting potential between Beal and Kyrie would be absurd. And then he's throwing LeBron at that, like, that's an ungodly spacing to surround him with. And then just be a lot of fun. And I think Beal would be the pick at 2nd overall, and I think would have been a really fun tandem with him and Kyrie, even with or without LeBron.
Trevor, what about you? Where are you at on this?
I just don't know that Kyrie and Beal would have worked as well, just because, like, Beal in college, he showed a little bit of a ability to kind of do some of the off-the-dribble stuff that he's able to do now. But, like, remembering, like, rookie, second, third-year Beal, like, he was pretty purely an off-ball player. And, like, we really would have, had a conversation about Kyrie's, like, passing ability, I think, long before it became an issue. It became a, like, media issue. Once LeBron came back, just because, like, I think that Beal would have had a little bit of a struggle kind of being used totally effectively. That being said, like, just makes a lot more sense than Deion does. I think it's a more natural fit there. Tries a little bit harder, is maybe a little less of an issue in the locker room. I say maybe because, like, the Wizards have not been the friendliest locker room to be in over the last, like, 5-6 seasons. So I'm interested to see kind of if that's a Wall issue or if that's a Beal issue, and kind of, like, how does that manifest with Irving. The interesting thing to me, though, is, like, just kind of thinking through, like, the logical endpoint of, like, taking MKG and kind of, like, considering where the roster is, considering where these two teams were at the same point, considering how that might impact, like, them in 2012 or 2012-13, and how they end up slotting in the 13 draft. Did the Cavs just become the Hornets if they take MKG? Because, like, the fit is...
Oh, my God. They could.
Oh, my God. That's painful. The other scenario if they take MKG is that, like, the shooting thing with him was clearly probably never going to happen. I don't know if the Cavs were going to, like, get him to be a shooter. But I think about him as, like... Let's say, like, LeBron still comes back and they had taken MKG. I think there's, like, a version where, like, MKG is giving you, like, a little, like, a version of what Jeff Green was giving you, or, like, what RJ was giving you without the shooting. And I think, like, he probably becomes a guy that, like, LeBron comes back, he kind of gets a smaller role. And even if he's not, like, perfect, I think that's a guy that, like, certainly could have helped you if he kind of works in the same way. I also just want to say, like, if you could just have drafted someone that had, like, never had that, where, like, they were, if you draft a guy after Kyrie who's clearly, like, your guy, and you just can avoid having to hold press conferences where you have to, like, act like you like each other but you clearly despise each other, that's a win. Like, I don't care if you would, like, the only one that's, like, worse than that is taking Thomas Robinson. Because if you take Thomas Robinson, I don't even, like, know what we're doing here. That's just some, that's wild to even think that that was, like, something they were reportedly interested in, which Chad Ford reported it, Terry Pluto at the time reported it. And, like, just imagine taking Thomas Robinson a year after Tristan is just, like, what are we doing here?
I really think the kind of dark horse here that, like, I know they considered at the time is, like, I mean, it's not, like, great fits with any of the guys we talked about, but, like, what if they take Harrison Barnes? Like,
that would have been fine. That would have been fine.
Yeah, that would have been fine.
Yeah, pretty well.
Yeah, Harrison Barnes is, like, the safest pick that the Cavs could have taken there. Like, it just would have worked.
I obviously, like, there's something with, you know, like, obviously, you trade up, you lose, like, the pick, and, like, I mean, that pick is what it is.
Useless.
Well, didn't the Cavs lose the coin flip for Anthony Davis?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lose the coin flip for Anthony Davis, try to trade up. And you look at the other pick, it's, you know, they end up with Tyler Zeller, who, you know, is jettisoned when they create a cap room for LeBron James, and that that's really his, like, legacy in Cleveland, is being part of the summer where they're trading away guys that they didn't try to invest in. Man, I just cannot, like, I just think about Beal, and obviously, like, I don't know what he would have been in Cleveland. These are, like, very big unknown variables. I just look at, like, his, even as a rookie, he's had a higher VORP as a rookie than Deion has ever posted in his entire career. The off-ball stuff just with Kyrie is just something that I think, even if it's not perfect and we wonder about, I think the Kyrie passing thing is like a very, would have been a very real thing that comes up. I think that skill set just fits a little bit better.
It's a hell of a lot better issue to have than what they actually had, I gotta say that.
Yeah, and it's like if he comes in and he pops and you can develop him and like maybe him and Kyrie, like I don't, like there's a lot of variables about the personalities, like we obviously know what kind of personality Kyrie is. There's just something very intriguing to me about you get Bradley Beal and if he becomes like a guy you can just kind of bank on, and be, even if he's not the really really good player we know now, or is really close to it, or gets like 90% of that, and maybe LeBron comes in and helps him blossom even more. That's just like something I just can, like, that is a guy that helps you just build for a long time and helps you in ways that Deion never did. And I think of anyone in this draft that's realistic in that top four, I think it's him, and then I think it's probably, and Trevor correctly pointed this out, I think it's Harrison Barnes. If you just take one of those two guys, I think you're just better off ultimately than Deion. And the MKG thing is maybe you're the Midwest Hornets, but like at least, you know, I think MKG could play defense, would have played some small ball five as a lead transition. There's some interesting stuff there too. Evan, do you have, like, when you think about this and you think about the Caps, do you have like a favorite redo you would do, like, of all, there's a lot of Cavs redo. There's Bennett that we talked about, there's Luke Jackson, there's a bunch of them. Is there one, if you're like, I just want to see what would happen if they do something different in this draft, do you have one that kind of stands out above the others?
I think the Bennett one for sure, because I do wonder, maybe just maybe, if you take Oladipo or you take, I don't know, even Nerlens Noel, like, the Timberwolves were a clown fiesta of a franchise. I wonder if you could convince them and actually appease LeBron in that sense, where maybe the Cavs somehow, somewhere, are able to keep Wiggins and still obtain Kevin Love, because maybe Oladipo's a better enough player to move the needle than Anthony Bennett, because the Cavs are just doing Anthony Bennett a favor at that point by just letting him get a fresh start, because, or as Tobias Funke would say, an anus tart. But it's just, I think I'd redo the Bennett draft for sure. Like, I remember Bill Simmons' reaction at the time. I think his reaction was the same as mine, because I had no clue who Anthony Bennett was. And then I remember how agonizing it was to watch him make his first shot as an NBA player. And I just wish I could just avoid all that pain and suffering to begin with. And I feel like Anthony would probably like to avoid all that pain and suffering to begin with as well, because I know he's been on record saying, like, he doesn't care that was the first overall pick. He never felt any pressure, but he's the biggest bust in NBA draft history, and don't really want that stigma associated with the Cavs sort of draft history on top of, like, all the other weird moves that they made on to begin with.
Trevor, what about you?
I've got a few, just because, like, we've talked about this before, so, like, I end up kind of just storing these in my brain. 2018, interested to see kind of how, like, Paul Bridges or Michael Porter Jr. ends up. obviously that's kind of a one that sticks for me. A couple other kind of like
couldn't go a podcast without bringing up with some indirect Colin Sexton shit. I love the bit.
Yeah. Jarrett Culver too. We can get him in here just to check our boxes. But just looking at some of the other kind of like fun niche ones. 1996, you picked 12th. Kobe Bryant, of course, goes 13th. As much as I like Vitaly Potapenko, and Kobe never would have played in Cleveland.
Zero chance.
That's kind of an interesting one. 2002 is interesting because the three players who go immediately after DeJuan Wagner are, of course, Nene, Amari Stoudemire, Caron Butler. Imagine one of those guys being present alongside LeBron is maybe a little bit more palatable, a little bit more interesting for kind of how the first few years of his tenure go. And then 2000 is my last one. Just don't do the Jamal Crawford, Chris Mim trade. You have Jamal Crawford. I mean, you're still going to pull the trigger on the Darius Miles, Andre Miller thing, but maybe that keeps you from getting Ricky Davis, and maybe you're a little bit more palatable at that time. And then, hey, suddenly, like, maybe you're not picking LeBron, and kind of the entire complexity of the Cavs since Dan Gilbert took over has completely changed. There are a few things here that I think are really interesting, and you can do this stuff all day. You can do this stuff for any team, and it's important to remember that we can make these types of moves for all 30 teams. You can pick out years where they made the wrong decision, where they picked immediately before a guy who was good, a player who sucked. You can do that the opposite way as well. You can destroy a new franchise through the draft. You can build a new franchise through the draft. So while this is a fun exercise to go through, and it's really agonizing sometimes, just remember that like this stuff, it happens to everybody. It happens to some teams more than others, but you know, if there's plenty of things that could have gone right or could have gone wrong, but this is the hand that we're stuck with in reality.
Yeah, that's right. I think the other kind of wrinkle to this is if you think about the Crawford, well, not even the Crawford one, if you think about the Luke Jackson pick and those kind of picks, and then like if Carlos Boozer doesn't lie to go back and break his word to Gordon Gund.
He lied to a blind man, you can say it.
Yeah. Thanks, Rob Pelinka.
He fucked the Cavs over more than once.
If you could have three guys in that time kind of come out and you build with LeBron from the beginning, I just wonder what that looks like. We're going to talk this week about the Magic series and all kinds of what-if stuff, but, like, I think if there's just, like, a little better draft look, a little better stuff about just building a more coherent roster around LeBron that first time, I wonder what it looks like. Because those teams were still really good, and yet they couldn't quite get it done.
It was just a cluster F all around. So we've gone over this so many times at this point.
Yes, Trevor, are you expecting this? As we think about the draft getting moved, as we wrap up here, are you expecting this year's draft to be a cluster in the same way maybe the Bennett draft is?
Yeah, absolutely. It was going to be that way before, and it's definitely going to be that way now. I don't think anybody who has anybody who says they have an idea of who's going to go number one, how the top five is going to play out, is just flat out lying to you or getting conflicting information. There's just no way to really get a gauge of how this draft is going to go. And spoiler alert, there's no way to get a gauge on how next year's draft is going to go either. Anybody who tells you with certainty how this G League thing is going to go and how that's going to impact how teams scout is talking out of their ass. They have, like, this is going to be a really really pivotal 2 to 3 years for the league, just because you've got the way that this draft works. You've got how the G League thing is going to impact next year's draft and how the coronavirus issue is going to impact next year's draft. And then you've got the supposed double draft. So it's going to be real fun the next 3 years. And I think we're going to end up with a wild shift in how the balance of power works out in the NBA with how these three drafts go.
I look forward to the Cavs taking Obi Toppin number one.
No, dude, James Wiseman. We're really going to hurt Trevor's feelings tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, if we're gonna go towards rock bottom, let's hit all the way out.
go through.
I think actually is Tommen. I think I would be more upset with Tommen.
Okay, but what if I told you the Cavs would then next year run out a lineup of Andre Drummond, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, Larry Nance Jr., and James Wiseman, like just all at one time? Like how bad would that be? That would be atrocious.
Yeah, it would be like
Kevin's 100% chucking a ball at someone's head within two possessions.
Oh.
Just to draft all these guards and then not play any of them.
Yeah, Colin's just like riding the bike in the back, and Darius and Kevin Porter Jr. are just like staring at this, and then you just have the five big lineup. Galaxy brain lineup.
All of our goodwill towards JB Bickerstaff would be immediately out the window at that point, and there isn't much goodwill there.
Just taking pull up threes, I'm out at that point.
Yeah, just we'll go to the top of Turner Tower and jump together.
Remember, kids, let's remember to not draft two of the same player in back-to-back draft, because then you have to play them together.
Yeah, please just don't overthink things. Please, just don't do it. That's going to be it for today's show, though, as we drove through this whole draft thing. Thanks again to Trevor for coming on. We'll be back very soon here with Justin Rowan talking about some other what-if things, including the Cavs. One of the things that I found while reading up on some what-ifs, almost trading for Tyson Chandler instead of Shaquille O'Neal, which is a very interesting what-if considering where Tyson Chandler would go right after that proposed deal at that time. And who knows if it works out, but that's just like...
He certainly would have been happier.
That's true. But that's going to be it for today's show. We'll be back again very soon. Thanks again for listening. Chat soon. Hey, Chris Manning here with one last thing as we wrap up this episode of Locked On Cavs. Now that you're done with this episode, tell your smart device to play Chad Ford's NBA Big Board.